Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's podcast featuring conversations with industry leaders about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Todd Spangler with Variety. Today, we have two guests joining us from Twitter, Sarah Rosen, who is head of U.S. Entertainment and News Partnerships, and Lara Cohen, global head of partners. These two executives basically represent the two sides of Twitter's entertainment business. Sarah Rosen works with media companies and studios to help them figure out how to get the most out of the Twitter platform. And Lara Cohen works with talent who use Twitter to engage with users around the world on a daily basis. We'll be right back with Strictly Business. Back with Sarah Rosen and Lara Cohen from Twitter. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Nothing right. Says Strictly Business like me and Sarah.
Okay.
You're making our podcast dreams come true.
Well, so you two basically represent the two sides of Twitter's entertainment business. With the organic talent side that Lara oversees as head of partners globally. And on the media company studio side with Sarah. Why don't you just first each talk about what do each of you do at Twitter? What is your mission there?
Sure. Larry, you want to start and then I can play off of you?
Sure. On the partners team, our job is to connect the biggest and brightest voices on the platform with their audiences. Through Twitter and through like creative use of our full suite of creator tools.
Mm-hmm. And for my side of the house, we're working with content partners, mostly larger entities like TV networks, music partners, publishers, et cetera. We're helping them be the best they possibly can be on Twitter from an organic standpoint. And that's where we cross over with Lara's team, best practices, the latest and greatest on products. And then part two of what we do is help them drive revenue against their content on Twitter through Twitter Amplify.
Okay. So you two work together quite a bit, I would think. If there's talent starring in a new TV show or a movie, that's a project that's bigger than just one brand or one actor or something like that, right?
Yeah, I think the great thing about the way our teams work together, and it really started from the origins of, you know, one of the great success stories of Twitter plus TV is, you know, Scandal and Kerry Washington starting getting the cast to live tweet that. And then, you know, Sarah's team working with ABC to sort of jump into that conversation and amplify that conversation.
Now, yeah. I'm old enough to remember when there was this whole supposed category emerging of second screen television apps, right? You were going to sit there with your dedicated app for whatever and watch television and interact with it online. Well, the social networks like Twitter became the place where that happens. Was that something that, you know, because you both have been with Twitter in these are eons in internet time, right? You've been
since the dawn of time.
Sorry. Todd, when I joined Twitter, we didn't have native video. I think it took like 15 clicks to get to actually watch a video. So okay. Yes, it was dark ages.
Funny story. I actually launched native video with Neil Patrick Harris. I went to Neil Patrick Harris's house because he was going to be in the hosting the Oscars. And we shot a native video from his house and then launched it from there. I think I was like on the phone with engineers because it wasn't working.
And Lair, when was that? Was that?
I think that was in 2014. I okay. would need to fact check that, but I think it was in 2014.
14 yeah. or 15, yeah.
Yeah.
But what would each of you say is, you know, the biggest change that you've seen overall in this in the social media space, in the entertainment space, as they intersect over the, you know, eight plus years that you've been doing this gig?
I mean, I can speak from my side. Obviously, Twitter has evolved as a platform, and how you can consume content has evolved. I mean, really, it started as a text-based app. Now it's very much media forward, and now we've got some great stuff working in the audio space. I think from an industry standpoint, over the last 7 years that I've been at Twitter, the marketplace has gotten a lot more crowded. So, you know, early days, it was Twitter and Facebook, then it was Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, then it was Snap. Now, and we have Pinterest and TikTok and LinkedIn. And so when we're talking to partners, part of my team's job is to help them understand what type of content they should be publishing on Twitter, because it isn't a one size fits all. So if you think about these social media teams that really have to distribute content across all of the platforms, our job is to help guide them in how to be successful on Twitter, because the clip you're putting on Instagram isn't the same clip you should be putting on Twitter, because they're different platforms and the user experience is different and the way people consume content is different.
So Sarah, what is, you know, the story that you tell to media companies? What is Twitter best for?
I mean, Twitter is the place for conversation, and it's really where you can connect directly with your fans. I think when people come to Twitter, they're in a discovery mindset, and they really are looking for authenticity. So when you're a brand, and you know, off the top of my head, some of the brands that do it the best are MTV and Bravo. They are true to their voice and who, you know, what their brand is, and speak authentically to their fans and give their fans what they want and connect directly. And that's how to be successful. We are the place for realness, and that's what resonates with users. And the other thing, just from a more tactical standpoint, people actually read on Twitter. So your words in your tweet matter. So yes, you're posting a video, but more so than other platforms, people are in the mindset of reading the up to 280 characters. So you can't just, it's not just a throwaway thing. Oh, I have a video, my caption doesn't matter. A lot of times that's what people are looking at first, or the words before they go into the video. So it has to do with tactical execution and being successful there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lara, let me ask you, I mean, for some talent, right? Don't they want more airbrush type of experience? They don't want this sort of unfiltered thing with the
I think
fans. What do you?
You know, you talked about like where have we evolved? Like since Sarah and I have been here, and I think certainly like you know the product has innovated. I think we've shipped more in the last 2 months than we did in entire years that Sarah and I have been here. But really, I think a lot of the evolution for us as a company is really drilling down to who we are and what our superpower is. And our superpower is, you know, conversation and authenticity. And I think when it comes to stars, you know, we sort of understand that this is not always going to be a place where everyone, I want every, you know, voice to you. I want every star to use Twitter, but I also know that like, some people are going to be more authentic and real and honest. And I think those are always the stars that sort of really excel at Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Now, you both have probably encountered some of this. You know, Twitter has had some issues with safety and I think what Jack Dorsey calls health of public conversation. There have been some, in some cases, right, some big name public figures who've left the platform, and maybe some of them have come back because of the problems there. What is that conversation like with talent partners, with media partners who are concerned about the level of harassment, say on Twitter compared with other social platforms?
It's no secret that you know Twitter has had its issues with you know vitriol on the platform, but I'm really proud of the progress that we've made in the health space, you know, and the efforts. I think my team has worked super closely with our policy team, with our enforcement team, with our product team to make the platform feel safer. And we've had, you know, a whole range of stars who have left, come back. I mean, even with, you know, Chrissy Teigen, for example, I think she ultimately, you know, really decided that like she needs her voice here. And I think that like, you know, we've taken a lot of strides to make Twitter feel safer and healthier for talent on the platform.
And I would say you know, Lara's team really is on the front lines of health and safety, both from an internal standpoint and fighting the battles and representing these voices that are so important to Twitter and what they need and what they experience, but also from an education standpoint. And they're often then supporting my team in helping to expand that message to the larger entities. But it's really the work that Lara and her team do on a daily basis to educate the VITs on our platform is really important. And they're like superheroes. They're constantly fighting the good fight.
Oh, Sarah. Thanks, Sarah.
Lara and I have a love affair. So if you're looking for any, just so you know, we adore each other.
That's good to know. You know, recently on this subject, recently Twitter said it's working on this unmention yourself from a conversation so you could untag yourself from some other post or conversation. Is that something that people are, interested in exploring?
Yeah, that's something that actually was born out of a brainstorm session with my team, working with the product team and with the design and research team about what we're hearing from the market and what would be helpful for talent on the platform. And so, I mean, that's what's really great about Twitter. I think that, like, even though I think we punch above our weight and have an outsized impact on the world, at the end of the day, we're still a pretty small company, and the cross-functional work that happens between teams like Sarah and mine that are on the front lines and sort of delivering product feedback back to the product team and having that implemented is really exciting.
I also think part of that is that we have always had the number one mission is to be good partners. So through the 7+ years that I've been here, you know, we've sort of, Twitter has had bump ups and downs, and we've never been the biggest platform. We haven't been the newest. So we've always set out to be the best to work with. And we really do fight and support our partners in their own challenging landscape and try to be as supportive as possible. And so, you know, one of the things we do is when we are testing out new products or potentially rolling out additional features, we take it to these partners who have devoted their time and energy and resources to Twitter and get real feedback, and we listen to them and we take that feedback and try to apply it and work with our cross-functional internal teams, because their point of view and their usage is really, really vital.
I think also, like, I mean, plus one to everything Sarah just said. And I think that, like, you know, part of that comes from the ethos, even from the beginning of the origins of sort of both of our teams here, is that we were never looking to disrupt or replace traditional media. You know, our job was always to help amplify and you know, be that second screen experience to make these experiences of traditional media even better, and to bring audiences, to expand reach of audiences, to help folks further monetize their audiences, and to bring fans even closer to, you know, the stars and the shows and the movies that they love the most.
Yeah. I mean, I think both of you have kind of touched on this, where, I mean, your goal, right, is to make Twitter the number one or number two platform that people want to, you know, engage with in terms of on the talent and the media side.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, there's just no denying, I think, you know, you can say a lot about Twitter, but there's just no denying that Twitter makes big cultural moments better. You know, I mean, I can't imagine watching an award show at this point and not watching Twitter at the same time, or, you know, watching like the NBA finals or election night. Like, I think, you know, it's that added layer of conversation that gets added on to these big cultural moments that I think is really what makes Twitter special. That's always been sort of our secret sauce.
And we often tell partners, back to talking about our role in guiding them and how to be successful on the platform. It's not an or. We're not in competition with these other platforms. It's an and. It's a whole ecosystem that really, for these content partners, they need to be leveraging in the best possible way. And it actually is better for them and better for us and better for the fans if they're leveraging all these different platforms, but in the right way and in the sort of the right approach for those different communities.
Okay. Now, why don't you talk a little bit about Twitter Spaces? You mentioned that, you know, the company is continuing to develop new products and features. What is Spaces doing for each of your teams? How are talent media companies using it? And, you know, what's the bang for the buck in terms of engagement? This is, if I can just editorialize here for a second, Twitter Spaces is sort of like a, it's like Clubhouse in a way, where for live audio conversations, or you tell me how you position that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, as I've now said like 700 times already on this podcast, like that Twitter really is the place for conversation. And I think what's exciting to me about Spaces is that like Spaces is a way to sort of reimagine conversation on Twitter and really sort of bring your timeline to life. And so we've put in a lot of thought collectively, Sarah and I, both of our teams, in thinking about, you know, we do think partners first, and we think about how this could help partners. So one way, you know, that we're already seeing in action is that like Spaces is a way to reinvent the press junket, you know, the traditional press junket. And we've seen this already with, you know, the Fast and the Furious with the F9 cast. We just did a big thing with the Ghostbusters cast the other day. So, you know, imagine a world where you can have a traditional press junket where amazing outlets like yours, you know, come
yes,
to
interview. They still come to Variety.
They still come to Variety. You know, and they come to, you know, do interviews with talent to promote, you know, to promote these projects that talent and studios are passionate about. And you could do that, you know, with talent, you know, someone's in London, someone's in, you know, someone's in New York, someone's in LA, you can all be together to do a press junket. Basically, like no one has to get their hair done, no one has to wear heels, no one has to drive on the 405. You know, sort of, it's like a win for everyone. And I think, you know, that's really exciting. Like the reimagining of the press junket. So bringing sort of the talent and the press and the traditional players into a press junket in a new way is exciting. And then, you know, with the fact that like you could do that in front of a live audience and in fact have, you know, live listeners be able to ask questions, sort of democratize something like the press junket experience, which is, you know, really exciting for us.
But it's really the live aspect of it that's the draw, isn't it?
Yeah, and the conversation, because, you know, from my side, if you think about a TV show or even like a music festival happening, people want to talk about it immediately after. So we've explored with a lot of our network partners with doing after shows immediately after an episode airs, whether it's a finale or just like the latest episode of The Bachelorette, and allowing, whether it's, you know, super fans or bloggers or actually talent from the show to create a room where they can all talk together and hear insider information. We actually hosted one of our first TV Spaces was with the cast of The Real Housewives of Atlanta. And fun fact, Lara and I are Bravo super fans, which is probably going to come up about 1,000 more times in this podcast. So it wasn't at all selfish that we wanted to create it, but really, you know, to hear the talent have a conversation, it felt like you were sitting in a room with people that you never get that access to, and they were actual humans, and it just furthered your fandom for that show. And so it's just another way to engage directly and continue the conversation on Twitter in an authentic way, which we know we love. And to Lara's point, it's a light lift for talent because they're you don't have to be in hair and makeup, although I do want it noted on this audio podcast I am in full hair and makeup and a prom dress with heels. I've never looked better in my life, just so everyone knows.
I'm wearing a tuxedo, so yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's just, it's easy and it's natural and native, and you can share tweets in it. And it's just, it's literally just a simple iteration to what was already happening and makes total sense and is seamless.
I think our dream state, you know, if we like can get pie in the sky about like what our dream state is with Spaces, like, you know, imagine a world where you're doing a press junket on Spaces that then leads to, you know, a television event, for example, where a cast and showrunners live tweet, you know, as it's going on, and then everyone hops into a space after to digest and discuss what happens. You know, I think that that's sort of like, you know, that's really like, I just think that that would make the fan experience so much richer and deeper, and really bring everyone closest together. I mean, like, it was an old trope from like when I first started at Twitter, but the notion that Twitter is like the world's biggest couch, you know, where for everyone to watch these things together. I think Spaces is just sort of a new way to reimagine that.
Okay. And from a monetization standpoint, we're constantly looking for new innovative ways to help our partners drive incremental revenue against their content. And so I think be on the lookout for how you're going to start seeing partners bring brands into the fold, into their spaces in creative ways, which just gives advertisers another way to align with premium content in an authentic way.
And you could see a world where, you know, spaces like, you know, like video get clipped up, you know, and then promoted.
Okay.
You know, I think that's directionally, you know, I'm not spoiling roadmap secrets, but directionally sort of a lot of where we're thinking
about. Micro podcasts or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think bite-sized content on the platform is historically what's always performed well for us. And so I think that, like, you know, there's no reason why bite-sized audio also can be super successful for us.
We'll be right back with more Strictly Business. We're back with the Strictly Business podcast. Let's talk about another new project that Twitter is working on, Super Follows, which I think you took the wraps off earlier this year. That sounds very, very interesting indeed, where you could have a subscription layer, whether you're a publisher, right, or an influencer, and give people extra content, special access. Yep. I mean, this is very exciting, isn't it, to each of your constituencies?
Yeah, I think it's a really exciting time on the product side, sort of at the intersection of product and content partners on the platform, because I think we're doing a lot of thinking into how content partner, like that great content on the platform, should be rewarded, you know, and whether that's rewarded through, you know, the model that's worked for years with Amplify, or whether you're making dough from, you know, subscriptions, or, you know, launching a tip jar feature. You know, you look at our acquisition of Review, like newsletters. But we really do believe that you know, that people who spend time on the platform and produce great content on the platform should be rewarded for it. So there's a lot of innovation happening inside, well, I guess the virtual Twitter walls right now around
and,
that. Well,
and I guess, think from subscription, you know, it's sort of, again, a natural evolution. If you look at the entertainment industry and where content is going outside of Twitter and how important subscriptions are right now, it makes sense for us to continue down a path that's going to be complementary and supportive of where our partners are going.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Sarah. So, I mean, you're taking care to not destroy the existing model, the ad-based model, which is significant and growing for Twitter, in introducing subscriptions.
Yep. Yeah. And I think there's room for both, and they represent different opportunities. And, you know, I think what we've built with Twitter Amplify is something that we're incredibly proud of, because not only is it driving a significant amount of revenue for Twitter and for our content partners, but it's also, you know, creating a good experience for users, because when they're seeing an ad, it's attached to a piece of content that they naturally want to view. So this is not in any way, shape, or form looking to replace or push aside Twitter Amplify. If anything, that business is just growing stronger and stronger as we expand to more and more content partners and continue to grow there. This is an and how do we explore doing more and giving more monetization opportunities to our partners and also individual creators? I mean, it's hard out there for a creator. And I think Twitter sees that and wants to support creators and give an opportunity to be able to monetize themselves and the content and the work that they're doing in a meaningful way on the platform.
Mm-hmm. It, and, you know, maybe I'm just being taking a devil's advocate stance here, but why is it taking so long to add these kinds of monetization features?
I think that, you know, I think that we had bigger, we had other things that we needed to bring to the table first. I think that, like, you know, Jack was very open that, like, health and safety was our number one priority for several years. And I think, you know, look, on a getting the platform to a state where people feel safe and healthy to communicate was, you know, our number one priority as a company. And I think now that we are sort of in a healthier state, which is not to say we're in a perfect state, there's still more abuse on the platform than any of us would like to see. But I think we have now sort of opened the door to be able to be more creative and be more thoughtful about how we can be holistically great partners for our partners in the platform.
Good. All right. Fair enough. You both have mentioned pop culture, and, you know, that drives a large part of the conversation on Twitter. And hey, keeping up with the Kardashians, the show is over. We had a story that there were 500 million tweets about this one show and the related talent over the 14 years of keeping up with the Kardashians. So that's all just gone now, right? I mean,
no.
Is it the Kardashians are forever, Todd?
What is dead will never die, Todd, when it comes to the Kardashians. No, I mean, I think, like, the Kardashians are a great example, I think, of how our teams work together. You know, my team has been working closely with the girls, you know, with the family for many years. I mean, I think that it's no secret that, you know, they are innovators and I think geniuses of how to use social media.
Well, they're some of the biggest talent on your platform.
They're some of the biggest talent on our platform. They're, you know, and, you know, the Kim, Courtney, Chloe, Chris, live tweeted every single episode this year. So I think, you know, when you look at, like, how to get to 500 million tweets, I think a lot of that starts with the talent themselves participating in and driving a lot of that conversation. And then, you know, Sarah's team on the East Side worked closely with the East Side to, you know, extend the reach of, you know, of the show onto Twitter and to monetize that content too.
I mean, and the Kardashians is the roadmap for building fandoms, right? So actually there's a tweet that just went out a few minutes ago from the official Kardashians on E handle at KUWTK. Although I know this is going to be played a few weeks later. And it's actually a video that E pulled together we partnered with them, pulled some historical Twitter data and celebrated all of the incredible fan accounts. So the talent, to Lara's point, they started it all and they have always been active and interacting directly with fans. And what came of that were all of these fandoms and fan accounts that have dedicated their lives to tweeting about the Kardashians and celebrating the Kardashians and talking about the Kardashians. And so it's not just the tweets coming from the talent themselves, it's also from the fans, and they know how to fuel that. And that's a real recipe for success for any TV show, any movie, any album release. Like, that's what you need to do, is engage with fans and get them excited and get them to care.
Yeah.
And I think, Todd, like, going back to one of your earlier questions about, like, you know, what about stars who want to be sort of slick and glossy? Is Twitter a place for that? And I think that, like, the Kardashians are such a good example of how, you know, playing to the strength of the different social media platforms you participate in. I mean, obviously, you know, no one loves a selfie more than Kim Kardashian, a glamorous selfie more than Kim Kardashian. But if she is coming to, like, give the reel about her show or answer a rumor or talk directly to her fans, I think that Twitter has always historically been the place where she comes to do that.
Now, I assume you run into cases where somebody is trying to promote a TV show, a film, a book, or whatever, and the talent just doesn't Twitter very well. I don't know. What do you do in that case? I mean, do you have a playbook of what works, what doesn't work.
We sure do.
What's the rule of thumb here in a nutshell?
I think that one challenge that we're always looking to overcome is the idea of like, I'm not particularly funny. I'm scared of Twitter. And I think that there's a lot that you can do on Twitter as a star. If you're a little bit more timid off the jump, that's like a lot lower lift, you know, even if you're just going through and, you know, liking a bunch of tweets from fans. So they feel like they're listening and you hear them and you see them, like that is so, so unbelievably meaningful to fans. If you answer questions or engage somehow, you don't have to have sort of an original, funny, pithy thought. Like you can just start engaging that way. And then we've worked really hard to create, you know, features and sort of content series that are sort of akin to more traditional editorial content. So Q&As on Twitter, you know, you can't, every star knows how to do a Q&A. And so things like that, we try to make the lift as light as possible and try to make it not so intimidating.
Yeah. Just be yourself, right? You've got to be authentic, and that's what translates.
Yeah. And listen, for a lot of the TV shows and our friends that work in social at NBC and Disney and Viacom CBS, they don't necessarily have access to talent for every show. And they have to be creative and are creative with how to engage with fans without the talent. And so a lot of what my team does is help them understand, you know, what kind of content should you be putting out? If it's a season two or three of a show, leveraging Twitter moments to do really cool lookbacks of clips of reminding you where you are in the season, you know, being engaging with the audience from the official show handle. So there's still ways to leverage that without the talent. I mean, the talent is like everybody number one, you want the talent. But we really also try to give those same tips and guides to the social teams so that they can still be successful when there's limitations, because everybody only has so much time and bandwidth to be able to participate in all of the show launches.
Yeah. Well, we are actually almost near the end of our time here, but I wanted to ask each of you, what are the success metrics that people look at today in terms of how they're using Twitter, and how do you measure success? Is it different than it was a couple of years ago?
I mean, I think from my side of the house, we look at success a few different ways. Obviously, we're looking at revenue. Are we growing revenue and mm-hmm. growing incremental revenue for these partners, which is really, really important, especially to some smaller publishers. Like we just announced at NewFronts a partnership with Genius. Having Amplify revenue can make a meaningful impact on their business. But even with the big guys like Disney and NBCU, you know, we have significant relationships. So we certainly look at revenue. From an organic side of the house, we're looking at engagements with their tweet, video views, mm-hmm. You know, follower growth to a lesser degree, but that's also important. And then kind of a squishier success metric that is really, really important to us is how are we as partners? Do they like working with us? Do they trust us? Do they want to take risks with us? Are they willing to test new products? Are they using the full suite of products of Twitter? And then I would say the one last thing, and something I've been really proud of from our team's work and also our partners, is the last year and a half has forced content partners to get innovative. You know, productions were shut down. Award shows didn't have audiences. Everybody was remote. And what was born out of that was a lot of innovation. And so what you'll see next from our team is really focusing and pushing our partners to think from an innovation standpoint and a Twitter first standpoint, like things like the billboard chart based off of Twitter conversation, or bringing back the VMA stand cam, but keep your eyes peeled for what it's going to look like in 2021, things like that. So just having a strong relationship and trust with these partners is so important, because it allows us to do more and continue to grow in the future.
So the pandemic helped, huh?
I mean, sure. It helped my sweatpants collection, that's for sure. But I'm not wearing sweatpants on this podcast.
Prom dress. But what I'm really proud of, you know, sort of the work that both of our teams did during the pandemic was, you know, a lot of the work that was centered around, you know, in a world where, you know, none of us could hang out together, you know. I think Twitter brought people together for those cultural moments. So it wasn't like, it wasn't just like everyone was sitting around and watching something together.
Right.
People were watching something together and talking about it together. And so, you know, we did, you know, a full cast live tweet, you know, when Hamilton premiered last summer.
Yeah.
And that was just like, you know, we had every single member of the cast, you know, Lynn was super, super all over it, participating and bringing the audience. It, you know, it was like, you know, that movie couldn't get into theaters at that time, but what a rich, wonderful experience for fans of that movie to be able to watch the movie with the cast and talk to them during it. So that was, I'm really proud of the work that we did, that the teams did during the pandemic. I think that like everyone on both of our teams worked really, really hard to think how we could help partners who were struggling during that time and how we could really enrich the fan experience for folks who are stuck at home. And in terms of success metrics, yeah, I mean, everything that Sarah mentioned, but in addition, I think there's a real keen focus on my team in terms of product adoption and making sure that we are educating like our full suite of partners on, you know, all these new creator tools that are happening. Again, not because it's good for Twitter, though, of course it is, but because we really believe that these tools are going to help bring creators closer to their audience and give them new ways to promote the things they're passionate about and make money off their content on the platform. So that's a huge focus for us. And really just, you know, collectively, like we're all here to serve the conversation. And I think the best conversation that happens on the platform is when, you know, our partners are participating and driving and cultivating that conversation. So.
All right. Well, one last question for each of you. What are the biggest misconceptions about what Twitter is or what it does? Maybe Sarah, if you start there.
Sure. I think that the biggest misconception is often that it's hard to use, or that, you know, you find people say like, I don't really get it, or it's confusing, and it's actually quite simple. And the more you use it, the more you love it. And there isn't a lot of pressure to be, and Lara talked about this, you don't have to have the perfect tweets. You can get a lot out of Twitter and just by scrolling through, and it's just such a great information source and community and conversation. So Twitter is easy. It's simple. If you need a one-on-one, I'm here for you. But I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions, okay, in my opinion. And that it's all news. It's not
That's what I was going to say. Don't take my answer. I was going to say, I think both Sarah and I very proudly represent teams that work with our news partners and care very deeply about our news partners. I do think that there is a misconception sometimes that Twitter is just a place for news. And I think that, like, you know, from on behalf of Team Entertainment, we are here to tell you that like Twitter is the place for pop culture. And I think that, like, you know, like there were 100, we did a Q&A a couple weeks ago with Olivia Rodrigo. There were 100,000 tweets about asking her questions. So it really is a place where, you know, you can become closer. Fans have a really unique opportunity to get closer to the stars that they care about the most. So
okay, good. Yeah. Not just for politics or news, really.
No, it's a place for memes. It's a place for reality TV. It's a place for award shows.
We didn't talk about Bravo as much as I anticipated.
I know.
I'll tell you something. I don't think Elon Musk would have gotten on SNL if it weren't for Twitter.
Yes.
Very good point. I mean, I'm constantly influenced by the Bravo content on Twitter. I had an espresso martini last night influenced by the Summer House cast. So there you go.
Well, thank you both, Sarah Rosen, Lara Cohen. Lara Cohen, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's this week's Strictly Business podcast. Thank you for listening. And thank you to our guests, Sarah Rosen and Lara Cohen from Twitter.